Welcome to Talking Success, the podcast series that focuses on everything fintech. I'm your host, Aaron Franks, and each week I'll be joined by a series of experts in the field who have a wealth of knowledge to share. It's time to meet this week's guest, so grab a coffee and let's start talking success.
It's interesting you mentioned the MTOs, right? Because I think, MNOs. You know, the role the telcos play in a financial inclusion, because we know about sort of mobile penetration across Africa. We know, you know, the sort of numbers that that we've seen over the last 5-6 years and what they're expected to be. We see the you know, the mass adoption of smartphones versus feature phones, you know, massively come down in price, which makes it a lot more accessible to a lot more people. But again, a lot of people don't necessarily have a bank account or the ability to open a bank account in parts of Africa. So being able to have an M-Pesa wallet or an Airtel wallet or whatever, MTN, Momo, whatever it may be, you know, to have those sorts of facilities. And then, you know, if I'm, so say I'm an M-Pesa customer, right, in Kenya, and I'm a smallholder farmer and I need to get some credit for buying crops or whatever it may be for the following day, and I go to someone like 4G Capital, who are a fintech but specifically on lending, if I, as a perhaps as another lender or a banking institution or financial institution, want to look at the holistic view of that individual, I'm not just looking at one source of data in open banking. I'm looking at, you know, their 4G Capital account in terms of repayments on loan. I'm looking at different trends based on, you know, payments or lifestyle choices, whatever it may be, on mobile phone. And I was talking to someone yesterday, actually, who was talking to me about different types of credit scoring, rather than just relying on credit unions, looking at things like social data, looking at geo sort of geolocation data, and you know, even for this blew me away, by the way. You know, in terms of how they do credit scoring for farmers in, I think it was Malawi, they're flying drones over the farm, doing imagery of crops to know the condition of the crops, and then applying a credit score to that farmer based on the condition of the crop to know whether that, you know, that's amazing stuff, that's a hell of a
use case, isn't it, right? But again, Darren, to the exact point you're making, right, is around this ecosystem built around the user. So if we're going to see that financial inclusion, right, if we're going to see that that integration between MNO as the entry point into basic level financial services, into credit, into full-blown transactional banking, that's where APIs come into it and play that value. So I think you'll actually see a very close correlation between financial inclusion in the continent as we try and switch from that 95% of cash into an increased percentage on digital payments. You're going to see a very close proxy between that transition and the preponderance and the penetration of APIs across the continent, right? But the challenge then comes to the banks themselves, right? That says, for example, how many banks in South Africa have a coherent API strategy? How many banks on the continent have a coherent API strategy? You'll find there's not that many of them, right? Because I think that and I don't know why, right? Because we have all the regulatory frameworks in place, based coming out of Europe, right? We have all the technical capability in place coming out of various parts of the world. So to my mind, I don't understand why the API race hasn't started. It's happened in pockets, but it hasn't turned into an arms race where we're now competing on price and the availability of data and information. I don't quite know why that hasn't happened. Or maybe it's still early stage. Maybe it will happen. But
it's starting to start happening.
But that, to me, that's a critical, path for us to get that level of financial inclusion across the continent.
But it started happening in Kenya. There's a bit of an API race going on in Kenya at the moment, right? A number of the banks really, really looking at, acting upon, you know, how do we recreate the bank? How do we transform the bank from being, you know, just traditional infrastructure to being, you know, an enabler of different forms of fintech, payments, custodian, whatever it may be. And that brings us a great segue onto my next bit, right? I've been so excited to talk to you about. Before we get to SuperApp, because we'll come to that, right? And if no one knows what I'm talking about, just give me 5 minutes, right? So before we get to that, again, during your kind of your talk a few weeks ago, you were talking about bundling, well, unbundling, bundling, rebundling.
Rebundling, that's right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Financial services products within a banking environment. Okay. And I think you used, or maybe I think I asked you the question about something like Revolut, I think, or maybe it was your example of Revolut. You know, Revolut started life as a wallet. I mean, that's what it was, right? It was just a wallet. I remember being one of the first customers of Revolut, but, you know, an early adopter of it going, okay, I don't trust it. I'm never going to put my life savings in it, but it might be a bit convenient. And then I remember when I was in Dubai and, you know, I needed some Forex, and rather than taking traveler's checks or using my credit card, I had this app on my phone. I went, oh, this is cool. I can move, like, I don't know, some money into dirhams, and I can start spending dirhams as if I'm transacting locally. Awesome. Mm. And then the product evolved. And if I look at Revolut now, I mean, it's mind-blowing, right? I can get pet insurance. Mm. I can insure my pet, right? I can book a holiday.
Yeah.
I can get airline lounges. I can trade. I can get crypto. I can buy stocks and shares.
So basically, Revolut's a bank, is what you're saying. They're a bank.
Well,
they're a bank.
Well, they are.
They're a bank.
Well, they are. Yeah. But they're not necessarily a licensed bank, not in the UK anyway.
No, this is also very true. But they're doing everything that a bank does, right?
Yeah.
So essentially, to our conversation, they unbundled, and now they've rebundled, and essentially became a digital first bank.
Yeah.
Okay. So. Let me. I think let's take two steps back. Let's go through to anybody watching this who doesn't know what bundling, unbundling, and rebundling actually is, right? So essentially, the start of the great fintech race, we can call it that, back in 2017, 2018, right? Even earlier in some instances, was around very smart companies and startups and fintechs picking at discrete parts of the financial services value chain and disrupting those particular parts, right? So you had like a Revolut that was great at storing money. There were wallets, right? You had another fintech that was only good at lending, so they just did lending, right? And you had somebody else who was great at personal finance, and that's all that they did. And essentially you had all these little islands of excellence, as it were, but you didn't have a coherent user journey. You had to go to various different fintechs to get that experience. So basically sticking to your knitting and being very good at it, right? Yeah. And then as the fintech way of operating and thinking, and simply just to gain scale, right? Because fintechs need to make money, they need to gain customers. Fintechs then started adding additional capability to their core, right? So let's use the Revolut example. It's great. They went from having just a wallet, then they added a basic level de facto transactional account, right? Mm-hmm. Then they added a credit piece there as well, right? Now they have pet insurance. So over time, as that fintech has needed to scale and become more profitable, drive more revenue, become more profitable, essentially, they have rebundled all the various parts of the financial service ecosystem that had unbundled, right, and disrupted. They brought them all together, but done it digitally. Right. And essentially, that's why the point I was trying to drive home is that they've built a digital bank. They are a bank, right? Granted, they never be called that in any traditional sense of the word, but they operate as a bank because they've brought all those various parts of that digital ecosystem and that value chain together on one interface, which is now rebundling. So now, for example, a Revolut is competing head to head with NatWest, right? Or Lloyds, for example. They've rebundled financial services, but they've done it at a lower price point. They've done it at a much better interface, much better experience. But most importantly, they've done it with the user at the center of everything that they do. Hence, they're a digital bank.
Yeah. Where does that leave traditional ex? Let's bring it back to Africa. Let's focus on South Africa, right? So we've got a number of incumbent banks here. We've got a couple of neobanks or challenger banks, Discovery, Zero, Time Bank. And I think the closest that I've seen to kind of a Revolut model is Discovery Bank, right? In terms of my needs and what I look for when I'm looking at a digital bank. I think Discovery is an interesting one because if you look at the foundations behind Discovery, they're not a fintech that's just come out of nowhere and has raised a load of VC or private equity money. You know, these guys have been around for a long, long time. They've got a very, very healthy business in terms of insurance. And then they've set up, you know, Discovery Bank. So me as obviously anyone listening to this, you can clearly tell I'm not South African. But as a non-South African coming into South Africa, I've been here a decade, I have trust automatically in Discovery. right? Automatic trust, because I know the brand. You know, would I be comfortable in putting, you know, large sums of money into Discovery? Actually, yeah, I would. If it was another bank, and I won't mention any other names, but if there was another bank that, or a fintech that just kind of popped up from nowhere and said, we can do all these things.
Give us your money.
Give us your money.
Yeah.
And in some respects, I still feel the same way about Revolut. You know, for me, it's a convenience, it's a wallet, and I can do some cool stuff on it. Am I going to put my life savings or a large proportion of my money into it? No, I'm not. A, because then I have a banking license in the UK and, you know, the capital isn't guaranteed or deposits aren't guaranteed. But I'm still a bit unsure. You know, maybe I'm a little bit old school. Showing my age now, right? But I just think that there needs to be a bit more reassurance. Yeah. So if we look at the incumbent banks here, the traditional banks here in South Africa, what does the future hold? Do you think there will be a – because, again, I'm an FNB customer and I've got loads of different kind of choices on my FNB app and, you know, too many that I probably haven't clicked half of them, quite frankly. And then there's a PayShap one just arrived the other day. And given I did an interview with Mpo the other day, I thought I'd better try it out, so I did do it.
How cool is PayShap, though? It's fantastic, right?
It's very cool, right?
In terms of user experience, right, and world leading as well. But anyway, that's the question.
I just wonder what, you know, your view, and not an Nedbank view, you know, just your own personal view, where you think, you know, the incumbent banks here in South Africa are going to go in the next few years.
Money is all around us, and we think about it more than almost every other aspect of our lives. But how can we make more of it, and what's our drive for building wealth beyond just the numbers in our bank account? Join us on the Make More podcast as our host Matt Heslin brings to you a dynamic lineup of experts in the world of investing, business, health, and beyond. Together, they unpack the secrets to not just surviving, but thriving in today's economy. It's about more than just wealth. It's about crafting life experiences, seizing opportunities, and building a legacy. Subscribe now to the Make More with Matt Heslin podcast and join us every week for new expert insights and inspiration.
So I'm just trying to just phrase this correctly in my mind, right? So the bank's going to face increasing competition from the neobanks, right? We see it already. So we know that Time Bank, for example, is, I think, existential threat is too strong a term to use, a bit of hyperbole there, but there is a threat, right? Same thing from a Discovery. Bank Zero is kind of just muddling along, and we'll see what that looks like the next 2-3 years. But to me, what I know is keeping a lot of strategy teams up at night is the Time Bank piece and the Discovery piece as well. And also Capitec to a certain extent. I know Capitec is not a neobank by any stretch of the imagination, but they are a challenger, right, to how we've done things going forward. So you're going to see the banks becoming a lot more nimble going forward. If we look at how banks have now become a lot better at getting digital products and experiences out onto their platforms, simply because they have no choice to. And when I started in the industry, I'm not going to expose my age, but it was a while ago, all right? For example, a release cycle was anywhere between 2 to 3 a year, all right? Now, in some instances, we do 1 a month. Some cases, we do 2 a month, depending on what's actually happening. So banks have become agile simply because they've had no choice but not to do that, right? And they've become a lot better from a design perspective. We're seeing a lot of UX and UI improvement across interfaces, across all the banks as well, simply because they've had no option but to become world-class at this, right? So essentially, you see the competitive pressure from your challenger banks and your neobanks making the traditional banks faster and better at what they do. There will be an inflection point, however, where you're going to start seeing a bit of customer leakage and revenue leakage from the traditional banks, right? The benefit the traditional banks do have is their brand. Everybody knows FNB, Nedbank, right? Not that many people may be au fait with a Discovery Bank. Granted, they're part of a larger brand, but stick with me here, or a Time Bank or a Bank Zero. So you're going to start seeing, as those challenger bank brands become more entrenched in the market, you're going to start seeing an erosion of customers from the traditional banks as well. That'll then lead to a second inflection point where the traditional banks then say, all right, guys, we are bleeding on NII, net interest income, and NIR, non-interest revenue, right, which is the core of revenue within the traditional banking space. We need alternative revenue pools and sources of income. And that's where you're going to start seeing banks moving outside of the traditional business and starting asking questions on how do we monetize customer data, right? How do we build digital ecosystems that have nothing to do with banking, but there's still a revenue pool for us there, which talks to our super app discussion we'll get into just now, right? How do we get into joint ventures with non-traditional partners such as telcos to start mining potential revenue on that side as well, right? So you're going to see almost a supermarketification, to make up a word on the spot, of the traditional banking services simply in search of additional revenue pools and profit pools. And this has become, this will become as a result of competitive pressure from your challenger banks and your neobanks. They start nipping away at that core business, NIR, and getting very good at nipping that core business. That's where I think it goes, right? You and I could take a bet, and I think I made this when I spoke at the last event, that sees potentially a 10 to 15 year horizon, maybe even 20 year within the South African space, where one of the majors will be taken over by a telco, simply because there's distribution component there from a telco perspective. There is a data component there. Telcos have a huge amount of data. Banks have a huge amount of data. But most importantly, a telco has significant alternative streams that may be very attractive income streams and profit streams that may be very, 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 very appealing to a traditional bank. That's my take on how I was gonna go out.
It's an interesting view. And I think if I was a betting man, which I'm not, apart from crypto, because that's kind of betting, I would look at a bank in 10 years' time, and I reckon just from a human capital perspective, they're a quarter of the size of what they are now. What, you don't need you're not running traditional banking.
But,
you don't need
that's happening right now.
Of course it is. Absolutely.
That's happening right now.
So, you've got AI into the mix, and you're going, hang on, right, there's so many jobs that will become redundant.
But it's happening now. So if you look at even pre AI, right? Because I know AI is now the hot topic of the moment, right? But even pre AI, if you ever can't sleep, read through the various banks' annual reports, right? And look at how much they're investing in terms of square footage. And what you're seeing is a year on year drop in terms of square footage. Actually, the amount of real estate a bank owns, right, and operates from, decreasing across all the major banks over the past 5 year period. And why is that happening? Simply because the real estate is not needed because the people aren't there to fill that space. But not only are the people not there, the customers aren't there to fill their space. Those customers have migrated to digital platforms, right? So you're seeing physical footprint decreasing, right? And you're seeing just less space being used to actually service more clients and service them better. Right. But to your point, as AI now comes into it, right, with GTP and all the amazing things coming out of there, and as RPA now starts maturing on steroids as a result of GPT, you may now start seeing the banks simply start shrinking because you don't need so many people to get the stuff done anymore. Right. And then, for example, if you start getting better use cases for blockchain, I know we spent a few minutes talking about that. Right. But blockchain has a fantastic use case in compliance. Right, in terms of smart contracts. Yeah. There's a fantastic use case in terms of payments, both intra-border and cross-border as well. Now, if you have blockchain, AI, smart contracts, and some really, really strong tech running that, do you necessarily need your massive compliance departments anymore? Absolutely. Right. So we are going to start seeing that disruption. I don't know to what scale, but to your point, the bank of the future will be smaller, will be nimbler, will be more profitable, right? And we'll be looking for additional revenue and profit pools outside the traditional banking business.
So we've got a couple of minutes left. Let's go on to super apps, okay? Because there's kind of a bit, another bit of a segue, right? If you were a betting man, which I know you're not, would you bet on... Sorry? Are you?
I am not a betting man.
You're not betting man.
No.
No, you're a banker. You're a banker. Of course you're not betting that.
I only bet on things I know to win.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, only bet on certainties. Yeah. If you were to kind of be a betting man, where do you think a super app, and again, just to sort of unpack what a super app is, it's basically you can do kind of your whole life is on one app, right? Without having, as we were saying earlier on in the conversation, without having to log on to 10 different sort of banking apps and a trading app and a payments this and everything's in one place, right? Do you think that's going to come from a fintech? Do you think that's going to come from a bank? Do you think that's going to come from a tech player? or do you think that's going to come from a telco? You can only pick one.
It's going to be option left. It's going to come from a telco. And I'll tell you why, right? So we've kind of alluded to it, but I'll tell you why you're going to see that real scale come from a super app perspective, come from a telco. Yes, I do know there are FS businesses and banks out there that have their own super apps that are doing okay in the market, doing quite well in the market. But to get to that step change, right, it's going to be a telco simply because they have the customer base, right? So if you look at the two large telcos in South Africa, Vodacom and MTN, between the two of them, each have about 25 million customers each. Right, that's critical. That's critical mass. Right, if you penetrate your super app, that gives you control over your mobile phone data, airtime, home fiber, right, a wallet, which they can do without a bank, by the way. Right, they can do that right now. Right, and then you throw in related adjacencies from financial service through a JV, where you're now offering credits. You're offering a low value insurance product, for example, a funeral plan, and then obviously. Then kind of upweighting that into high-value insurance, which is home, car, and personal health and cover on personal life and all those good things. Now, do you see how the choice becomes a telco? Simply because they have the data, they have the critical mass in terms of customers, but most importantly, they're in the best position because they have a core product, right? Which is the mobile phone stuff, right? Even have the device, right? So you can get the device from them. There's only one bank in SA that's going to give you a device, and it's FNB. The other banks have tried and haven't quite cracked that business case. So they can give you the device. They can give you the content for the device, and then they can give you all the other stuff that you need for your life through that device. Telco for super app.
It's pretty compelling. I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. We can go on for hours, right?
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
And there's so much more. I'm going to have you back on. And I think we should wait 3 months, right? And we'll see how many banks are still in existence, what the price of Ethereum.
Exactly, right? Let's see where interest rates are as well. So if we start seeing some softening and interest rates getting a bit dovish, I think the banks are going to be okay. If we're going to see Jerome Powell, because everybody takes lead from the Fed, from the Fed Reserve, get more hawkish, it's going to get shaky out there. So maybe 3 months. Let's see where we are.
Well, I'll tell you what, if XRP goes to $13,000 a coin, or $1,300 a coin, I'll be recording this from like Hawaii or the Bahamas or something like that, right? So we'll know in 3 months' time, based on my background, how the price of XRP is gone.
Exactly.
Thank you so much. I've really, really enjoyed talking to you. Thanks for sharing your insights, your energy, and your enthusiasm. And if anyone wants to find you, LinkedIn, best place?
Best way is LinkedIn. Absolutely, the best way is LinkedIn. Work emails is never good because, it's a daily blizzard. So absolutely, LinkedIn is the way to go. Just search for Tawanda Chatikobo. You'll find me on there. And then let's keep the conversation going as well. And I love a good debate. I'm wrong sometimes. Sometimes I'm right. But that's the whole thing about a debate, right? We learn from one another. So absolutely, Dan, thank you for this. It was very good.
And that's a wrap for this week's episode of Talking Success. Thank you so much for tuning in and joining us for this fascinating discussion on all things fintech. We hope you've enjoyed this episode and have gained some valuable insights into the ever-evolving world of finance and technology. A huge thank you to our guests for sharing their expertise and providing us with some amazing insights. We certainly couldn't have done this without them. Don't forget to subscribe to our podcast and stay tuned for more exciting conversations with experts in the field. Until next time, keep learning, keep growing, and keep talking success.